This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, a major political setback in California this weekend for Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, who did not get her party's endorsement in her bid for the for her fifth term in the U.S. Senate. State Senator Kevin DeLeon, who says he is a fresh face with stronger progressive credentials, is challenging Feinstein. But he did not reach the 60% threshold needed to win the endorsement. Well, but here's the question. Has identity politics caught up with Democratic lawmakers? We'll talk about that. And the claim by one GOP governor that our two-party system, that's Republicans, Democrats, will soon be a thing of the past. Dr. Tobin Grant, professor of political science at Southern Illinois University, joins me in just a moment. And speaking of politics, right, is there evidence of complacency among conservative voters? Now, last fall's off-year election in Virginia revealed the importance of every single vote. Republican David Yancey won the 94th district when the tied election was broken after his name was drawn from a bowl. Now, that narrow victory gave the GOP a narrow margin of 51-49 seats in the House of Delegates. That was averting a 50-50 split. Virginia Congressman Dave Bratt of the 7th Congressional District joins me for that conversation coming up here on Washington Watch. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls. I was on the road all last week, and so we had a lot to talk about. But I want to go to the phones. We're going to talk to you this afternoon, hear what's on your mind when it comes to elections, and especially the upcoming midterm elections. So stand by. We're going to be talking to you a little bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, you can find it later right there, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Okay. I want to talk about what happened this weekend in California with Dianne Feinstein. But first, in an interview with ABC this week, Ohio Governor John Kasich, who was a candidate for president, lost that, did horrible in the primaries, has said, he refused to endorse Donald Trump in the general election. He says that Americans could be witnessing what he called the end of a two-party system. Now, that's a pretty strong statement. The two-party system, which I actually think has gotten stronger since Ross Perot made his bid back in, 1992 for a, or maybe the four, anyway, in the early 90s. Joining us now is Tobin Grant, Dr. Tobin Grant, professor of political science at Southern Illinois University. Dr. Grant, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's talk about this. As I mentioned, back in 1992 was when Ross Perot made a third-party bid. The parties have moved to kind of strengthen their hold on our political system. Is John Kasich right? Could we be witnessing the unraveling of our two-party system?
It would be really surprising if he ends up being right on this. Like you said, the two parties are really entrenched, and I mean that not necessarily in a negative way. Like they're really strong, they're really together. When you're looking at what would it take for another party to knock one of those out, to have the U.S. without the Republican Party, without the Democratic Party, you know, would take something just unbelievable, and it's just hard to imagine that sort of thing happening.
Now, of course, Ross Perot, when he ran, he self-funded a lot of his campaign, very similar to what Donald Trump did in the primary, taking on the other Republican candidates. But since then, the parties realized there was a weakness there, and a lot of them have adopted rules in terms of the really compact primary that makes it difficult for a third-party challenger to really make a lot of headway in this process.
Yeah, and if you think back to 92, Ross Perot is a good example of, like, why third parties don't work. I mean, he ran in 92, and he ran again in 96. But in 96, it was like there wasn't much there. And part of the reason for that is that, you know, you had in the his biggest issues, he complained about NAFTA, but he also was a big budget hawk, you know, and all talking about deficits and everything else. And then when Republicans took over Congress in the 90s, they had a lot of budget hawks that ran on those kind of similar issues, and that issue kind of got absorbed into the Republican Party, you know, for throughout the 1990s and then beyond. And so,
well, would you say, Dr. Grant, would you say then that, I mean, he influenced the process, and that's one of the ways that the two parties hold on, is that they absorb these issues?
Yeah, that's one of the major ways that third parties, and that's one of the reasons why they don't make it. I mean, if you have this threat that comes from a third party, and if it's an issue that people aren't paying attention to or something that's out there, then you're one of the parties, and you notice, you know, Ross Perot gets almost 20% of the vote. You know, do you, you know, deal with that? You know, how do you take that on? And you're like, yeah, well, we can take that on by, you know, being more fiscally conservative in terms of deficits and that sort of thing. And then the budget becomes less of an issue 4 years later. And so, and that's one of the ways that third parties, they raise up an issue and they kind of point out that maybe the parties aren't paying attention to something. But then it's a lot easier for an established party to adapt and absorb that than it is to create a whole bunch of institutions and local and state and all these other parties that it would take to create a viable third party.
Yeah, that is difficult, extremely difficult to set up the infrastructure across all 50 states in such a short period of time. And the rules in some places are very onerous. But I want to go back to what John Kasich said in his rationale, which is almost completely opposite of what you're saying, is that he says we may be, and I'm quoting from him, this is his interview with the ABC chief White House correspondent, Jonathan Carl, we may be beginning to see the end of the two-party system. A multi-party system at some point in the future may be coming forth. And he said the reason is that because the parties are no longer responsive to the people. They don't represent the people. But what you just laid out is that actually they are. They adopt, they move, they change in order to meet whatever might be at the forefront of public discussion.
Right. And, you know, I think he's responding to, you know, how he views where he's at versus where the elections have turned up for him lately. And, you know, and but if you go like, okay, if he teams up with a Democrat and they put something together, what sort of agenda would that be? Some sort of moderate, you know, mishmash in between, you know, and you're going to have people, you know, that are going to stick by their party and looking at it. And so, you know, I think that he's, you know, he is not really a third party that would kick in as much as, you know, he might challenge someone in the primary or try to put something together there, but be really difficult even at that.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. Dr. Tobin Grant, my guest, professor of political science at Southern Illinois University. Dr. Grant, let me ask you this. My observation, but I want to see if it's an accurate observation. It appears that the political parties are responding, I would say, to their base, and we're actually seeing the parties become more really polarized and distinctive in what they hold to. I mean, there's – like we used to have Blue Dog Democrats here in Washington that were fiscally liberal, socially conservative. Not so much anymore. It seems that there is clear contrast between the parties.
Yeah, no, the parties – are as far apart today and as distinct from each other today than they've ever been in their history. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, you don't have the Southern Democrats who are, you know, socially conservative but maybe lean one way on fiscal matters or anything else. They become much more cohesive in terms of their ideology, much more together when it comes to voting on issues, a lot more partisan votes in Congress than we've ever seen before. So if you said today, like, who is a Republican, who is a Democrat, you have a much clearer image of what that is today than you did 20 years ago or 30 years ago, where you could have more variation and more differences across the parties.
So I think my observation, again, you're the expert, you're the professor here, but Barack Obama I think, understood that, the Democratic Party kind of moving to mobilize, energize their base. Donald Trump really the first Republican in a long time that understood the power of that, instead of reaching to the middle, motivated his base to turn out and vote.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. And I think he kind of discovered, for lack of a better term, the Republican base and who, you know, what really got voters going in the Republican, his base of support for that, you know. And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right that there never was a pivot, you know, coming from the Republican primary in the same way that, you know, you saw consistently year after year or election after mm-hmm. election with Dole and Bush and McCain and Romney and others, where they made a pivot after, you know, like, okay, well, I've satisfied you guys in the primaries. Now let's go to the big race.
He just continued to run hard on those issues, which I think is my view explains why he got record numbers of evangelical conservative vote. Dr. Corbin, I want to get your Dr. Tobin. I want to get Dr. Grant. I'm
no,
sorry.
That's fine.
I want to get your take on what happened in California with Dianne Feinstein. I mean, she's running for a fifth term in the United States Senate. I mean, she's by no means is she a conservative, not even a moderate. She's liberal, but apparently not liberal enough for the establishment there in California.
Yeah, there's a fight. There's always fights in parties about what a party is, and you know, the Kasich thing is one part of that on the Republican side, but on the Democratic side, you have this fight that, for lack of a better term, is kind of the Bernie wing of the party and the Clinton wing, you know, more establishment Democrat. And, you know, Feinstein is definitely into that. You know, her age doesn't help her. You know, she's going to be pushing 90, I think, whenever she, she were elected. But definitely on these issues, she's not the activist. She's more of establishment, yeah. I didn't want to go with centrist because that's not the right term. She's definitely no centrist, but she's now, definitely more establishment, yeah.
So are the Democrats now, as they've pushed this identity politics over and over, are they becoming victim of their own political scheme?
Yeah, well, I think that this is where, you know, it's going to be really interesting where the Democratic Party is. I mean, you know, with Donald Trump in the White House, we know where the Republican Party, you know, who the leader of the Republican Party is right now. That's clear. But on the Democratic side, it's going to be really interesting to see what ends up coming out as they hit these primaries, and they've definitely got an energized base. But what that's going to turn out to be is a lot more unclear.
Wow, fascinating. Dr. Tobin Grant, great to talk with you. Thanks for stopping by and kind of enlightening us a little bit on politics.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Tobin Grant. I think it's really interesting to see the dynamics here of everything that's in play, especially putting it in the context of history. Okay, speaking of history, coming up, we're going to be joined by the congressman from the 7th Congressional District of Virginia, another former professor, Dave Brat. He's coming up. He's going to talk about the complacency that might be present among conservative voters and why that is important. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Do not go away.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon. For the second weekend in a row, the movie Black Panther was setting box office records. Now, I'll have to admit, I haven't seen the movie. Probably won't see it. But something else that caught my attention about this movie is that there's been a voter registration effort going on in conjunction with the movie. The Electoral Justice Project, which is an offshoot of the Movement for Black Lives, is registering people to vote at these movies. Now, I'm all for citizen engagement, all right? I'm all for it. So register, be informed, and vote. But I want you to understand, there's something going on here since 2016. But 2016, for the Republicans, was a base vote. The reason Donald Trump won was because conservatives showed up to the polls. Evangelicals, George Barna calls sage cons, turned out over, and I think 91% of them turned out. That's unprecedented. 94% of them voted for Donald Trump. All right, now let's look at the elections, what's been happening since then. And I want to focus on Virginia this past fall. They have off-year elections. Their legislature was three-quarter Republican. Now it's almost evenly split. In fact, the Republicans have one vote margin. And that's only because in a race that was evenly tied, they drew straws and the Republican won. What's going on? Here to talk about it, Congressman Dave Bratt represents the 7th Congressional District of Virginia, and he knows a little bit about upset elections. He beat Eric Cantor in a Republican primary, who was the House Majority Leader at the time. And, Dave, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
I mean, this is pretty unprecedented. Talk about how close elections are. The control of the Virginia General Assembly came down to one election, evenly split, and they drew names or straws out of a hat to see who won.
Right. It really is remarkable. In political science courses, they always ask, does your vote count?
And that sure did in that
tens
one.
Tens of thousands, right? Dead even. They threw out one bad vote that tied it, and then they had to put names in a fishbowl and pull them out, right? And that determined the election. And so our gubernatorial candidate last time, Ed Gillespie, ran a good race. He brought out more voters than any prior Republican governor candidate. and ran on good state policy, 20, you know, PowerPoint, 20 great state level issues. It got swamped by national issues. The number one exit poll was health care. And it's somewhat stunning to me. I taught economics for 20 years. My dad, you know, was in healthcare. My family's been in healthcare. And Obamacare, every fundamental promise that was made has been broken on healthcare.
Right.
And so on policy grounds, I don't really get it. Obamacare, you have this standard story back home. People are paying $2,000 a month with a $5,000 deductible. And the average family has $400 in savings. And so those national issues swamped the state level issues. And then you had the reaction back home. A lot of folks said, hey, we wanted Hillary to win. We think this was unjust, and so we're coming out. And so there is a movement now on the left. They're very organized, like you just mentioned, with the voter registration, and the intensity level is very high. But on the public policy issues, it's very hard to find exactly where they stand, right? We were for tax cuts. The Progressive Caucus, which is the only vote on record, they have 107 Democrats who voted for a tax increase of $10 trillion. And that's not an error. They voted for a $10 trillion tax increase over 10 years, would have raised spending by $11 trillion, resulting in more debt and deficits than our package. On the policy, I tell people, make sure you're very careful. Look at the policy issues on the ethics. Ask the folks, right, what system of ethics are we talking about, right? What are you going to teach the kids in K-12? What system of ethics matters to you? I ran on the Judeo-Christian tradition, the rule of law, free markets, the fundamentals that would have been completely in sync with JFK, right? I haven't moved. I taught the same thing 25 years ago. Adam Smith, James Madison, who wrote the Constitution, went to Princeton Seminary, where I went. My thought's been consistent. Those are the fundamental ideas and principles that made this country great. JFK was right there. I haven't moved. And people are talking about the right-wingers and left-wingers. The left has moved massively.
Right.
Even in the last year or two, on immigration, you can look at the vote. They said, we want a DACA fix. So we're doing the Goodlatte bill. We got a DACA fix for 700,000 kids out of the shadows, legal status, just what the left asked for. And everybody, Barbara Jordan back 30 years ago, Bill Clinton in his State of the Union, Pelosi, Dickie Durbin, Schumer, everybody was in favor of all of our immigration policy until just very recently. And now it's just a massive flip. The left used to care about the worker and wages being flat for 30 years. Bernie was there, and he was winning until it got rigged. And so, folks back home, I hope everyone's digging in and doing their homework on the fundamentals. I've always run on a very positive message that is affirming and constructive. Right. And the left, even in philosophy, right, the philosophical movement in Harvard, Yale, Princeton for the past 20 years is basically deconstruction. Right? They are not constructing the rule of law. They're not constructing business. They're not constructing a religion. They're deconstructing all the fundamental pillars and all the philosophical assumptions underlying basically Western civ.
I mean, they're deconstructing human sexuality.
Right.
There's no stop to this. But I want to ask you this, Congressman Brett, from a standpoint of the voter, is there some complacency out there after Trump won that, oh, we've got the momentum is our direction, and, you know, is there concern going into this midterm that too many conservatives might just stay home?
Yeah, I mean, we just saw it in Virginia. The Hillary precincts were up 1%, and the Bernie precincts were up 20%. That's 1/5 new voters showed up out of the sky. And so conservatives and libertarians and free marketeers and religious folks, there's a big consortium on our side, right? Pro-business. Business, for example, is kind of playing at 50-50 lately.
Right. They've been compromised in
right.
many ways on the social issues as they've become more political. They're picking sides in the culture war instead of making widgets and doing business.
Right.
They're playing politics.
Right. And so we just did a tax cut. The Atlanta Fed has us growing at 5.4% next quarter.
That's huge.
You need to grow at 2.75 to pay for our tax cut.
Yeah. Dave, hold up. We're up against a break.
Right.
But I want to continue this conversation. I want to talk about what's at stake here. What good things have happened? What might not happen? If there's a change coming in this midterm election. So, folks, don't go away. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm talking with Congressman Dave Brat of Virginia. We're going to finish our conversation on the other side of the break, and we're also going to take your phone calls a little bit later. So don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And by the way, talking about elections, as I mentioned last week when we were on the road, we were traveling to five different states, meeting with potential supporters or supporters, potential partners, as we were talking about our culture impact teams and what we're doing in churches across the nation. And if you'd like to be a part of that, where you can, in your church, you can be registering, equipping, and helping mobilize those evangelicals, those conservative voters who can help make a difference in their community and in our country, email me, tony@tonyperkins.com. We'll make sure we get that information to you. My guest, Congressman Dave Bratt, sticking around. Not my congressman. I don't live in Virginia. I still live in Louisiana, but I would like to have it. He's a great guy. Former professor, now teaching Congress a few things or two. Let's talk a little bit, Dave, about, you know, elections have consequences,
yep.
All right?
Yep.
Fake news doesn't always cover all the positive things that would let conservative voters know that, hey, you've gotten a return on your vote. What are some of the things we've seen in the last year?
Yeah, well, I just spoke with my Asian chamber, and I hate to give a professorial 30-second end run. But the greatest human welfare gain, right? Sometimes we don't talk in ethical terms enough in terms of the human good. The greatest human welfare gain in all of human history happened in the last 20 years. And all of human history, people basically made $500 a year to live on until yeah. about 1776. In the last 20 years, the Chinese and the Indians, 2.5 billion children of God, all went from making $1,000 a year to making about $10,000 a year. And so your question to me is, what happened good in this country? What happened good is they went toward freedom and free markets, and that's what enabled that tremendous increase in human welfare, right? Access to medication for their kids, a little health care, little housing, a little nutrition, a little this, right? We've been going in the wrong direction. President Trump wins the election, and the optimism indexes are through the roof right now. The consumer optimism is through the roof. Capital investment optimism, investment business expectations in the future are up. And my favorite economist is Deidre McCloskey, and she says what the fundamental cause of economic growth over the long run is that positive. For the first time in human history, said the business person is morally good. And you did not hear that 10 years ago,
right?
That business is morally good. And so Trump comes in, huge new wave of optimism, capital investments through the roof, economic growth through the roof. My firm, Altria at Home, is given $3,000 bonuses. We have over $1,000,000 bonuses, just in counting as of a month ago, right? I mean, it's just through the
so
roof.
So let me. There's economic optimism, and yep. I know that's kind of your background,
right.
In as an economic professor, economics professor. Why not the political optimism among conservatives? I mean,
right.
Really, in our economy, it's believing and then you see.
Right.
Why not the same thing when it looks at, when we're talking about the culture and the things that this president has done, restoring religious liberty,
yep.
One of the most pro-life presidents. I mean, where's that optimism?
I don't think we talk enough about those, right? When you talk about the social side of life and the moral side of life, I don't think we've taught our kids. I don't think we've had those conversations the way we should, right? If you graduate from K to 12 right now, you have not had one ethics course required, not one philosophy course, and not one religious course. And so people have almost been trained that that conversation's just off on the side.
It's not important.
It's not important.
We shouldn't have it.
Right. But the family unit has always been the central organizing unit for all of Western Civ, right? It was kind of the debate between the Greek city-state and the Hebrews. And thank God the Hebrews won, right? So the family is the core unit.
Yeah.
And if you go away from that, right, the genius of Western Civ is we synthesized Greek reason
right.
with the Judeo-Christian tradition.
Absolutely.
Anyone on their own, you can go off on a little bit, right? But together, boy, that's been the genius of our civilization. And that's turning a little bit. I think people are starting to get back to, hey, the culture – there's something going on, right? In Virginia last week with a terrible gun tragedy, and our hearts still go. We're just in pain.
Yeah.
But in the kids, 9,200 threats from students on the schools in Virginia
yeah.
in 1 year. In Virginia. When we were growing up, that wasn't the case. And so I think the president is making some good moves on that. On the courts, there's some good moves. The rule of law still matters. But those are kind of off in the backdrop. They're pretty deep theoretical.
And I think the press doesn't want to give life
right.
to those issues because
yep.
that is also what motivates the base of Republican voters. It's
yep.
the culture, the values issues. It's the soccer moms.
Right.
It's those that care about the quality of life,
yep.
not just from an economic standpoint, but from a moral and a cultural standpoint.
That's exactly right. And Hillary, when she was running, I mean, the left has learned, right? So they're smart politically. They say our values all the time, our values. But if you say, what are those values, right? I taught ethics for 20 years, and I recommend Alistair McIntyre has a brief history of ethics for anyone who wants to chart this out. If you say which value, you should be able to name an ethical system or a philosopher or a theologian or some system of thought that you believe in, right?
Mm-hmm.
The left, where are they? I mean, they can name Martin Luther King Jr. That's a great one to name. A Protestant
right.
PhD theologian, right? I mean, but after that, it kind of comes to an end. And so when you hear about these values in church, make sure you ask which values.
Or whose values.
Whose values, right?
Judeo-Christian values is what we're talking about here. Congressman, we're out of time. As always, great to have you on. We'll have to come get you back on. We'll do a bigger lecture sometime.
Anytime. So, thank you, Tony.
All right, Congressman great. Dave Bratt. Find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We're coming back with your phone calls next here on Washington Watch.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery, once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, here's what we're going to talk about. Midterm elections coming up in 8 months. That's a long time. It is, but the primaries start in just a couple of months. In fact, they're sprinkled out all across the spring and into the summer, late as August in some cases. So it's upon us. Now, this is important. I was talking earlier about this movie Black Panther, where they're doing voter registration. It's being tracked back to George Soros funding these initiatives, and it's to recruit sign up voters that tend to vote for the Democratic Party, liberal candidates. So here's what I want to talk about. Are you planning on voting? Are you engaged? Are you working in a campaign? Are you supporting a candidate in the primary? Or maybe you're going to be a candidate. I think it's extremely important that we not disengage. You know, does your church have a culture impact team that's educating the congregation, regularly registering voters? I mean, this is, folks, a lot is at stake here, all right? A lot. And it's a part of being a Christian. It's a part of our Christian citizenship. It's not everything we focus on. Politics and elections are by far not the majority of what we spend our time on. But it's something we shouldn't neglect, or else we end up with like the government we had in the last 8 years. 866-372-7234. Yes, I should have given out the number. 866-372-7234, the number to call, to weigh in on this topic. Midterm elections. Are you engaged? Are you saying, no, not going to do it. I'm tired of it. I didn't get what the Congress didn't do what they said they were going to do. What do you think? This is what I think. I think that Nancy Pelosi is hoping that she can capture the gavel, impeach the president, and put an end to a conservative agenda. And it won't take much. By the way, speaking of the consequences of elections, a story out of Harvard, a Christian group, a college group that's on campus, is basically being suspended because the organization, it was the Harvard College of Faith and Action, confronted one of its assistant Bible course leaders about her new relationship. She said she had finally found someone who makes her laugh, feel safe, and challenges her to be a better person. Well, there was just one catch to that. The Crimson, it's a publication there, explained the person was a girl. Well, the organization has a standard of biblical conduct, meaning no non-marital sexual relations, and marriage, of course, being between a man and a woman according to biblical standards. So they removed her from leadership, and so the school is saying that they violated their discrimination policy and is kicking them off the campus or shutting them down. Now, this actually is what would be addressed, something we talked about recently, in the Higher Ed Education Act, which is basically reauthorizing, the federal government's reauthorizing the higher ed bill, which protects religious freedom on college campuses. This important piece of legislation, which brings free speech and free expression of ideas back to college campuses, which as of late has become a place of great hostility toward people of faith and students of faith. All right, 866-372-7234. By the way, if you want to weigh in on that with your member of Congress, I would encourage you to call them. You can call the Capitol switchboard 202-224-3121. That is the Higher Ed Reauthorization Act. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Joe in Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a low battery and a low signal, so if I lose you, I apologize in advance. But I think some of the important points, we've got to get, like you said, we've got to get the Christian conservatives, the evangelical vote out. And what they can points they can make is just, you know, 4 or 5 points, I think, to get their point across. Not a single Democrat voted to help replace or repeal Obamacare, the disaster that was Obamacare, the health care disaster. Secondly, not a single Democrat voted for the tax cuts, which people are realizing now. Not a single Democrat voted for that. When they announced at the State of the Union that black unemployment was at an all-time low, not a single Democrat applauded for that. When they announced at the State of the Union Hispanic unemployment is at an all-time low, not a single Democrat applauded for that or clapped. And that's 4 points right there we can, you know, drive home. The other thing is under the previous administration, the previous 8 years, black unemployment was near all-time highs. Now it's at an all-time low. So that would be my midterm campaign, and thanks for all you do and help us get the evangelical conservative Christian vote out this midterm season.
All right, Joe, good elevator speech there. I think you you covered the landscape. And there's actually a quite an extensive list of accomplishments that have been made, not necessarily by Congress, but by the president. Now, Congress has done some things. I mean, the tax reform bill, obviously very, very important. A lot of the good stuff that's passed out of the House has died in the Senate. That's the problem with the 60-vote threshold. All right, let's go to Pete in South Carolina. Pete, welcome to Washington Watch. Oh, we lost Pete. Well, let's go to the Lone Star State. Let's talk to Carol. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. How are you?
You know that we have early voting, and I was at the polls Saturday morning. And what I liked is that we received a voter guide that basically listed the most conservative candidates on the Republican ticket. And I took that into the polls so that I would know, because in the guide itself, there was, you know, the platform that each person was campaigning on and the different things and all that kind of stuff. And also, you also saw the disparity in what some were saying that they were doing and what they were actually doing. and I really appreciated that, came from our local Republican Party, and just a way to help the voters know who they were voting for before they went to the polls.
Well, I think it's important, and I think that's a critical important critical point to make, Carol, about the party platforms of where the candidates stand in identification with the party. That was a key element in the 2016 election when people had questions about Donald Trump and his conservative credentials, but he wrapped himself in the party platform. Historically, and we've talked about this, it's been a while, but we've talked about it on the program, Republicans adhere to their party platform 89% of the time. Now, that's pretty significant. I was, quite frankly, astonished when I saw that number. And that's looking at about 40 years of party platforms. Democrats vote about 74% of the time. We should be grateful because their platforms are usually horrible. But to Texas's early voting, I think they're, a few days they've been early voting. The numbers show a pretty significant uptick in Democratic voters in early voting. In fact, pretty substantial over the last election. I think they're in day six or seven. I'm not sure exactly, maybe a week. But the numbers are up pretty significantly. And in fact, I was talking with a pollster earlier today that's working in Texas and made note of that the energy, the enthusiasm among Democratic-leaning voters is pretty high, which means the complacency among conservative voters could be detrimental to a conservative agenda. 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation. Let's go to Lonnie in Nebraska. Lonnie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. I'm a first-time caller here.
Well, welcome. Glad to have you calling in.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that, the last election that we had here with Donald Trump, and that I stayed up the whole election that night and walked the floor and prayed all the time that the election was going on, because I seen that the writing was on the wall if Hillary Clinton was to get in as president of our country, and that it would only have been a matter of time that everything was taken away from us. And I take it very seriously, and so does my wife. I like to be an informed voter, and I try my best to do that, with a pro-life vote. And, I encourage people to get involved, because I know, that our hope is in Christ alone, but we need to do our part, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lonnie, thank you so much for being a first-time caller. Appreciate you calling in. And let me he was talking about coming into that election, walking the floor, praying. There was, and I agree, I actually totally agree with Lonnie's assessment. I, too, said, you can see it's on the record, I believe that what was at stake in the last election was the future of our republic. I believe that had Hillary Clinton been elected and continued to build upon the policies that Barack Obama put in place, that we would have lost our republic as we know it, the freedoms that are represented by our republic, that are recognized by our republican form of government. And a lot of people were praying. A lot of people were engaged. There was an intensity. There was an understanding of what was at stake. And I'm just saying that the evidence suggests that we've kind of, we averted that bullet. We dodged it. It's not not happening. And so we've kind of slipped maybe back into some complacency. And I'm just saying, look, this is an ongoing responsibility and obligation to be informed and to be engaged. And it shouldn't be your sole focus. We got to have a life. But it's just a part of who we are as Christians. We need to be informed and engaged in our communities. And that's in local elections. That's in volunteer work. You know, that's humanitarian work. We should be holistic in our efforts to impact the world around us. And part of that is voting and being involved in our political structure. All right, let's go to Joe in Oklahoma. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch. Go ahead, Joe. Well, I don't know if we got Joe. Let's go to Dennis in Iowa. Dennis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello.
Hey, go right ahead, Dennis.
My call. I just wanted to comment more directly. You were talking early in the program about, you know, whether a third party would be viable and about how important every vote is. Mm-hmm. I can attest to some of that. Back in my college days, I was one of those who supported Barry Goldwater to be nominated for president, and we did get him nominated. And what happened, everybody thought, well, hey, we've got him nominated. Now the Republican Party apparatus can kick in and we'll get him elected. Well, that didn't happen. A lot of the professional politicians, for whatever reason, sat on their hands, and we had the biggest loss of a conservative candidate that, you know, nationally that we had ever had. The last two elections, presidential elections, I did not vote for the Republican candidate. I didn't think very much of Mitt Romney. I wasn't sure about Donald Trump. I thought we had a viable alternative in the Libertarian Party. That's what I voted for. A lot of other people did. If you looked at the percentages in the this last presidential election where they broke the states down by more than just Republican and Democrat, there were several states that had as high a percentage for the Libertarian Party. That was 17%. If you may recall, the Republican Party itself was once a third party. You know, they defeated the Whigs in 1860 as we were headed toward the Civil War. Now, that was an unusual case.
All right, Dennis, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, and wow, I don't have time to respond to that because we're up against the end of the program. But definitely something I want to talk about tomorrow because different day parties have adapted to try to cut off any challenges. Is it more realistic to work to reform the parties from within? Might not be perfect, but we'll talk about that. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. Until then, remember the Apostle Paul says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.